Sarah.
Hi.
It's Joanne. Yes, can you hear me?
I can, yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking about when I last visited your studio, which I think had to have been 10 years ago.
Right, it was in Chinatown with Brian Miller.
Yeah. And you were in the process of finishing that music book that I left it for.
Oh, I was going to the end.
That was,
I'm still working on it.
That was going to a museum exhibition at the time.
It was shown at the Hammer, but I'm still working on it. It's been since 2008 till now, and I think I'm probably going to show it at the Tang Museum in July 2021, and there was talk mm-hmm. of making a facsimile book of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure. Everything's so weird with institutions and budget cuts. I don't know if that will happen, but I'm still working on that.
It's almost like your journal, isn't it?
Yeah, in part. I mean, I feel like my whole practice is my journal, but that.
Talk to me about that.
My work is super personal, and it deals with my own life as well as what's going on in the culture. I pull from, you know, from music, from reading, from friends, my own, you know, life as I move through it. But then I work in abstraction. So, you know, when I was a kid, I found one of my diaries from when I was really young. And then if you took the cover apart, I had made this hilarious, like, code. So instead of calling someone a hotshot, because I guess I thought that was a bad word, I would call them a sun gun. Like, totally ridiculous kid stuff. But I was so into, like, hidden meaning and coding everything. And I think that probably there's safety within that. And I think being an artist and putting yourself out there for critics, for the world, I mean, it's not an easy path. And but also, I feel freedom in abstraction besides, you know, being able to move through ideas that I'm figuring out as I go along. I appreciate the open-endedness and letting the viewer come to your work with their own experience and the work sort of teaching and sharing and taking everyone on their own interpretations and journeys with it. But also, my work is journalistic in the sense that it's survival. I mean, it came to me in a time as a teenager, you know, I always knew when I was going to be an artist, and it wasn't really a question, and it's just something I have to do. I do it pretty much daily. I really love writers. Some of my closest friends are writers, and I feel like it's akin to a writing practice. Absorbing the world and putting it back out.
Were there artists in your family?
No, my great-grandmother was a quilter, and I grew up with a lot of her quilts, and that, like, I remember seeing when my grandmother died in, like, the early, maybe late 90s, she said I could have anything in the house, and I asked if I could have the red quilt that her mother had made, and she said, no, you have to wait until I'm gone, then you can have it. And then I finally got the quilt, and I realized, wow, this is so much like my paintings. And it's probably, I don't know, it's probably not that related. I didn't spend too much time with my great-grandmother, but I do have these visuals of this very old woman who lived without electricity because she heated her tiny house with manure. She had an outhouse. She pumped her water. Like, this was a hardcore independent poor woman who quilted and used so much bright color, I think, to pull her through, you know, her existence. And I think that a lot, you know, my colors are all, they're very similar, and I think they do have an emotional and psychological effect on people. And the show I'm making for Suzanne's is called The Possibility of Overcoming Negative Thought. And I had already figured I was going to call it that before the lockdown happened. But I just decided for the first time to really make paintings that make people, that I feel like help you feel better. And people, that's like the first comment I usually hear about my paintings is they make people feel better. Or I hear that they make people cry, but somehow I think it's a cathartic emotion. But anyway, I decided to really embrace that. So these paintings, they're all about individual things, but under that title, and I'm just embracing it this time.
Do you have a photograph of your grandmother's quilt?
I have the quilt in my house. I could photograph it and show you.
I would love to see it.
Yeah, they're pretty amazing. They're not cheese bends level, but they're kind of, they're close. They're pretty cool.
I would be very interested.
Double-sided, which is
cool.
Yeah. You're interested in, sorry to cut you off.
Yeah, no, I'm just interested in how we carry our history with us as a maker of art and as an observer of art. I'm very aware that my history feeds my aesthetic. I'm not always conscious of it. Most of the time I'm not. And I've come to believe in the time I've spent in studios with artists that the same thing is happening. You're just, it's part of your DNA. It's in your body, in your mind, in your memory. And it comes out. It finds its way. And that's the wonderful thing. And that's what connects us as humans. You know,
right.
I feel that I connect to you through the work. And that we share something through that work. I don't need to know what it is. I just trust that there is something there.
Because
it's profound. In fact, I think sometimes when I go to an exhibition of a group show from the collection, I feel like I'm looking at portraits. Because
they are
I'm
portraits.
Seeing the work, but I'm thinking about the person.
Yeah, I just picture, I want to do a portraiture show. Because a lot of my paintings actually are portraits of people, but I totally believe in what you're saying, that my work is us. And, I had a funny title, but I started to make a little folder on my computer of all the portraits of people I've made, and there's a lot now.
That's the beauty of abstract, isn't it?
Yeah, but it is interesting if you're brave enough to be open to someone's artwork that you can feel it and intuitively access something, because not all viewers are able to.
Well, it requires very careful looking. So it also requires you bringing yourself to the looking and being open.
Being open.
To listening and feeling, you know, not coming at it with preconceived ideas. Mm-hmm. Just feeling it. Talk about the music component in your work.
Well, like a lot of my materials, it honestly is just sort of one of those mistakes or chance things. I was in Zurich for a show, and one of my best friends is the artist Colter Jacobson, who actually his relationship to paper is, you would really appreciate. But he uses a lot of sound materials. And I was in a thrift store because I was making a work on site, and a lot of my works on site, I'll just find objects at the time of and then bring them into the work. And I found some music sheet and picked it up and realized it was a really great surface. It was like a hot pressed paper. And I picked it up and bought it for Colter, but then I didn't see him for so long that if anything in my studio hangs around too long, I just end up using it. And then it sort of stuck. And I had made, my practice really started in the 90s with works on paper and works on site, and I wasn't making paintings yet. And then I sort of moved away from that. And I think around the time of the music sheet, I started to, like, really move back into paper with some sort of, like, clear force or, I don't know, and also around that time or a little bit before, my mother was working at a small museum in upstate New York, at one of the Shakers museums. So there was only 3 employees, so I could go in and, like, handle the Shakers drawings, which was pretty mind-blowing. I mean, I knew that drawing, the show at the Drawing Center really blew my mind years ago, but then to be able to be holding their gift drawings myself, like, with gloves without anybody watching me. And I think that, and sometimes the music book or the music sheets, I think about those drawings and Indian miniaturism. I also saw this pretty profound show of Indian miniatures somewhere in Europe. Maybe it was the same trip to Zurich, but and gouache had always been my favorite material. And there's something that happens on that hot press paper. But I think then I try to replicate in other ways, like, actually the last rose you have too, that work, that those roses are placemats from Zurich. I'm not sure if it's the same trick, but I don't know. I guess there was something in that time that I moved back to paper, and it might have just been because I had to leave where I was living really fast, and it's around the time I moved to LA, and paper, I mean, there's that thing about, someone said about poetry, how it's great because you can write a poem on a napkin. And when you're an artist working on paper, it's so free. You don't need a huge studio. You can do it anywhere. You can put 20 drawings with you and take the train. I think that's part of my love of all that way of working.
What, how big a part is the work on paper in your studio practice?
Pretty big. I'm working on it also, a show for May 2021 right now for Gallery Along, and I'm going to do a whole room of music sheets that are similar to the book, but they're not bound. So I have like a stack of, I don't know, maybe 20 music sheets. I mean, not 20, 200 music sheets.
Mm-hmm.
I have about 20 going. And that one good happy accident of COVID is usually I go out and find the paper, but I just started randomly buying big blocks online because I can't go out. So I've gotten some real gems of papers just by blindly buying. That's been kind of amazing. But I think the work on paper happen when I need to reground myself. A lot of the times after big museum shows or places when I've had to travel to do work on site, those are so physically exhausting and they consume my full body. And then when I come home, I just want to like pull back in, regroup. The works on paper are very much like a meditation practice. And I sort of bounce back and forth. It's really hard for me to do paper and painting at the same time. They also require like different parts of my body. And I can't really do the small brush and the big brush. I just sort of like to lock in and work one way and then move. And then moving back and forth, it helps you see the other thing you're working on differently. It shifts your perspective.
How much is what you produce on paper, and you see how the color in the paper absorbs the color, and you see what results, how much of that do you try to duplicate in the painting?
I don't ever try to duplicate anything in the paintings. I think sometimes the bigger duplication happens between stuff that happens on the works on site. I'll try to bring back to the canvas to bring more life into it.
I see.
But I don't plan, like I don't make a drawing and then make it into a painting.
No, and that's not what I'm asking. The tonal, sometimes the subtlety you get on paper from color.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, asking is, what is the interplay? Is there an interplay between what you produce on paper and not in terms of composition or, but just the feel, what results, and how does that translate, if at all, on canvas and vice versa?
Sometimes I feel like I get it on the canvas when I alter the canvas texture. Like sometimes I'll collage things on and paint over it, or sometimes I do this sand thing where I sand and then paint, but not sanding it, but gluing actual sand onto the top of the canvas. And I do think I use a lot of experimental all water-based paint, and sometimes it looks like the paper when I use a really high and a super matte paint, and then I can put gouache over it. I don't know.
Just curious. You know, some of that is just, again, a subconscious thing. You develop a feel. And it's almost automatic. The body just goes to it somehow. I wanted to ask you about what do you think has been, can you cite a transformative moment for you in your artistry?
In the actual work?
Yeah. Was there a moment when everything opened up for you?
I think there's
some trigger.
There's been multiple moments. Like, I think around 2000 when I started going into abandoned buildings and making works on site, that was, like, really owning, okay, this is sort of the core of what I do. And then I see a shift when I moved to L.A. from, like, around 2009, I see a shift in the work. And then I think around 2009, it was like the paper sort of hit its peak. Like the work you have, Autumn, and I sort of figured out, I kind of mastered what I was doing on that printmaking paper. And in 2011, I did a show at Honor Fraser called Freedom is a Prime Number. And I think those paintings really solidify what I'm about in painting. And then I just had this 2019, I did this insane 10 by 150 foot stained glass wall at the SF airport. And that was a total surprise. Like, that blew my mind in the way of making a permanent, humongous work for the public. So that's sort of taken me to where I am now. And now I'm just sort of putting all those pieces together.
What did you find to be the most challenging of that project? It's gorgeous, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Really fun.
Just the working with so many people, and I mean, I feel like it really, I grew more as a person working on that than, like, it was almost like if my parents had sent me to summer camp as a kid, which they probably shouldn't have made me do, because I had to really flex my social skills. And, you know, there were, like, so many webinar meetings with, like, 30 people screaming at each other, like, contractors yelling at each other, and I just have to sit there and then interject. So learning how to navigate all of that. But it was really fulfilling, and I totally would welcome it again. And for my first big public art piece, like, now I feel like I love it, but now that I know so much more, I feel like I could do a better work.
Was that your first experience collaborating?
Kind of. I mean, I did a collaboration, in quotes, with George Hearns, the beat artist. He and I are friends, and the show happened at Orange County Museum of Art called Two Schools of Cool that Sarah Bancroft curated, because George had said she should check out my work, and she had never heard one of the old guys, because she worked with Walter Hopps in his last years, and she had never heard one of the old guys talk about a young woman artist, like, in a way that was like, you should look at her art, you know, like a compliment way. So anyway, the show paired women around my age with men around his age, and we were all supposed to collaborate, but George and I don't really collaborate, so he just let me, it was a collaboration, but it wasn't like we worked on the same thing, and we were both so similar that it was more like just hanging out with George for a couple of years, but the SFO was like working in an office or something, which most artists don't really know. I mean, when you teach, you have to learn how to do that. But I've been a studio-based artist for so long that my days are my days. So it was interesting.
What did you take away artistically from the collaborative experience?
Well, there were so many different sides. Like, from the city, I have so much appreciation. The SF Arts Commission's public art collection is amazing, and they've been doing it for so many years, and I really appreciate all the people there working and helping us realize our dreams and pushing me. Like, the woman who started the project with me, Justine, and then later, also almost every single person on the team of about 20 people, at the very end, after 2 years, there was only like two of us that started the project that were still there, so that was wild. It was always changing. But the woman who I started with on the government side really pushed me to think bigger than I was comfortable with. And I'm very practical. I didn't come from money, so I always think about how to do everything efficiently, and I did stay within the budget and all of that. But like, it was really hard for me in the beginning to just like think way bigger than anything I had ever thought, as far as like size and budget and like how much is that going to weigh and how do you get it up there. And so it really expanded me in great ways. And then I also learned, I tend to have like a natural voice of saying no and authority when needed. However, it's some of the workers who were up there were just total assholes and during the installation, they broke it 5 times, and it wasn't my piece breaking, it was someone was breaking it. So I finally flew up there and I saw a group of these guys pushing on it, joking, and I went up and confronted them, and like just sort of finding my voice and and confronting a group of construction workers. Nothing has, knock on wood, broken since. So just, you know, like so many different sides of my person, and then yet you're also supposed to be an artist, but to do a public work, you have to know how to be a business person and a team player and also an authoritative voice. And you have to collaborate with people on ideas that you don't necessarily like, because it's not just
a that's the part I was most curious about.
Yeah. I learned to do it.
Okay. And in the end, were you appreciative of moments when you felt that you were having to compromise?
Yeah, I don't even know if in the end I really had to compromise too much. I just had to be open myself to things like we introduced fused glass in the piece. It's stained in fused glass. And I thought fused glass was so ugly, and I did not want to use it. But we just kept pushing the material until I finally started working with this guy, Quentin, at Judson Studios. And Quentin and I worked together so long that it worked. And also the interesting turning point was I finally realized I have to draw it by hand in order to give it to them to translate. So there were like these cool learning experiences where they could take the geometric ones and I could draw a mini one. But when it got to the fused, which required someone else's hand melting it in a kiln, my hand also needed to draw it out. And those are just things that you learn as you're going along.
But it's another tool now in your toolbox.
Yeah, it's great.
You see yourself maybe using more glass in the future?
Yeah, I totally do. And I've made a lot of private commissions. And I had never really used it before. I had made one piece before.
Mm-hmm.
So
let me ask you another question, and that is the idea of play. I think play is an important aspect to a studio practice.
Totally.
And wonder what that looks like for you.
I think it's totally important, and it for me the most important thing is being free of time, and also staying connected every day with the work. It allows a space of freedom, which creates playful moments where you discover. I mean, for me, play is really experimentation and discovery, and those only happen when you've eliminated all the noise and you can really just get to work or get in there. And I can access that pretty fast in the works on site. Like another pivotal moment was I did the outside wall at the Institute of Contemporary Art in Los Angeles when it opened. And when a curator just says, here are the keys, you have 2 weeks, make something, like the compression in that time makes it so the play is accessible because it has to be. Where in the studio, if I don't wake up and get up here right away, I could just get stuck answering emails all day. So I feel like my biggest battle is how to clear time and space and be very good with boundaries so that the play and the freedom exists. And then when that exists, the work is better.
I'm curious about the spontaneity that's required in your work.
Yeah, I mean,
in the art of making. I sense there's a great deal of freedom, especially in the bigger installation work.
Yeah, there definitely is. I mean, I think of myself as a pack in a pack
as
a ball. So it's kind of weird. Like, I attack it, and then I resolve it. And
okay.
I feel like maybe Amy Spellman said that to me once, because I think she's very much an attack and resolve painter, too.
Mm-hmm.
But I just lunge, and then I pull back, and I resolve. And I like to work on tons of things at the same time, because there's things, paintings will hit certain points where if you lunge at it at that point, you'll totally kill it. So that spontaneity, like I have to always have something in my studio that's at the zone where spontaneity is welcome and needed. Because as they resolve, it becomes less and less about that.
I'm thinking it's like improvisation is what I
mean. Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Which definitely relates to the music too, in terms of process.
Yeah, no, it totally. That was the biggest connection George Herms and I had, because he's all about jazz and improv.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, my whole practice is.
Well, I could see your work relating to jazz very much so.
I listen to hip hop all the time.
Have you?
Yeah.
Do you listen to music when you're in the studio?
Yeah, I have to. It's actually how I block everything out. Like, I like to listen to things. Like, if I'm listening, I don't really listen to something new when I always am changing my music, but as I like to paint to things that I've already listened to 100 times, and I think of it as sort of as like the drug that feeds my studio, because besides dark chocolate and tons of caffeine, like, I don't have vices, but it's really hard for me to paint without music. Unless I'm in the country, I've had country studios, and then I like it to be really quiet. But in such an urban environment with helicopters and everything, like, I like to block it out and just paint.
What happened when you moved from one coast to the other?
Well, I did it really young, but I did keep a studio with this amazing painter, Martha Lloyd, who passed away a couple years ago. From 15 to 26, she let me come back and live with her in the summers in the country. But I left upstate New York at 15 and have been in California since I was 17. I'm 41 now.
So you've been there longer than I remember.
I've been here a really long time, and I've been on my own a really long time. So, but I now have finally found this sweet spot where I'm so lucky with my setup, and it is, I mean, it's very open, but I had, like, a possum nursing her babies on my back porch the other night. Baby hummingbirds right by the studio. So it is nature, and I look out onto mountains and trees, and it's a good balance.
Well, you like flowers, I mean, or plants, I think I read.
Yeah, my garden's wild now.
You love looking at plants, and some of your colors come from there.
Yeah.
How would you describe your artistry? What distinguishes you from as an artist? I just want to hear it in words.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would say probably the number one thing is the way I'm expanding painting, the way that it also ranges from handheld dollar bills to room size installations. There's a wide range. There's a intersection with architecture, with the body, with experimentation. It's also it's both like it holds this sort of space of beautiful and poetic, but also very like loud and aggressive in a way that I think is essential.
I like all those words.
I also think the hand. The hand is really key, and I still make all my own work, which I think most people at my place have, in career levels, have a bunch of assistants doing it. So for me, like, there's still very much, there will always be an integrity of me, myself, being in the work. Yeah.
Okay. I found a couple quotes,
mm-hmm.
which you can comment on. Abandoning control was at the core of everything I do.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that's where you get the spontaneity, and that's the attack and resolve. Abandonment of control is accepting that you don't really know anything, and that you're always growing and always learning, and when you abandon controlling everything, then the work opens up, and you learn more, and it shows you more.
So it's sort of the opposite of perfection, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, and planning. Mm-hmm. But that was actually the biggest part of the collaboration with the SFO work, was I learned how to plan a little, and it was a great skill to learn. It's essential when you're working with other people.
Another quote, I'm happier with the potential of an empty studio than with the satisfaction of a full one.
Oh, yeah.
Being able to let go.
And my studio is empty now. I'm the 30th. I can't wait. It's so freeing to let them go. Like, I'm in the middle of 8 big paintings right now.
Wow.
And it's amazing. It's just like this vibrant energy jumping all over. But also, you walk in and you're like, it's like entering the room full of chatter. And it's kind of a lot to deal with. I'd rather walk into a quiet room.
Has the metallic you've always been there?
Probably. I mean, I use a lot. Some of my earliest work has tinfoil in it.
Is that right? Okay, that's good to know.
Yeah, but I also use. There's one now here that has silver leaf. I want to get this crushed glass that I had in the really early piece that I want for one of these that is of a kind of metallic, even though it's glass.
Have you done many residencies, Sarah?
Early on I did, yeah. And they were really helpful, but now that I have a mortgage and I have my sort of dream set up, I don't know what would make it worse. But yeah, I did Durazzi, which was probably my favorite one. I did Skowhegan, which was very difficult, but it also, that was sort of like me learning to do summer camp, and I brought a tent with me and slept in the woods because I couldn't really deal. But in retrospect, I did make some good friends, and that's where I met George. So a lot of that, those lasting connections. And I also had my studio out at the Headlands, but I wasn't a resident. I was an affiliate. From my last year at the Bay Area, and that was the best because of the ocean more than the residency. Just being able to walk to the ocean every single day is a total dream. I don't know if that will ever happen again.
What do you feel is an important thing for an emerging artist to understand that's not written in the Picacci?
That is really hard, and you should be willing to sacrifice a lot. I think that people should have another skill. If someone told me that, I would have told them to take a walk. So, I don't know, it's really hard to make it as an artist. And you have to, if you have any, I mean, having doubt is a huge part of what makes most artists great. You have to have doubt, but if you don't feel like you really need to be an artist, why be an artist?
Mm-hmm. Is doubt the same as risk?
No, but risk is also, you have to embrace both of those. I just think like doubt, I think the best artists doubt themselves all the time. Because if you don't doubt yourself, then your ego is too big and you're going to make horrible work.
And what are you doubting?
Like, is this fucking crazy? Like, what? This is my life? Like, this is...
Uh-huh.
I mean, it could daunt
me. So you're doubting purpose?
Yeah, and even, like, uh-huh. when I'm watching what's going on in the news and should I be doing more, what does that look like? Especially being the type of painter I am, I love being alone. I need to be alone. But it is a life of solitude that breaks most people. It's not something that's comfortable for a lot of people. So if you're not comfortable in that, become an artist that does social practice or become a community leader or, you know, like there's, yeah. But also keep going. It's my other. Like, keep going.
Well,
and maybe that
just keep working. Keep working. Keep working.
Exactly. And don't take galleries too serious and all of that. Because, like, maybe, you know, like, maybe you're not going to find the support that you should find. But you can still make your work.
And you should.
Yeah, and you should.
How many galleries are you associated with now?
I'm with 3 galleries currently. Tony Meyer in San Francisco, I've been with forever.
Uh-huh.
I recently went to Suzanne Vielmetter in L.A. I'm doing my first show with her soon. And then I've been with Gallery LeLong in New York for about a decade, and I do not have Europe, and I need to figure Europe out. But
doesn't LeLong show in Europe?
I don't work with the Paris branch. I'm in New York.
But they don't show the work in Europe?
No.
I didn't realize that's how it worked.
Yeah, and it's, yeah, someone should have told me that
I didn't realize that, actually.
They show some artists, but not all of them, but then also the ones that show in Paris are the ones that get better fair representation, so it's a bit of an issue. But, I did this amazing show. I'm not represented by them, but I was in a show at Victoria Nero a couple of years ago.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, and it was called Surface Work, 100 Women in Abstraction. It was such a cool show. Like that was sort of the best zone of everything I work in. Yeah, and just like to be surrounded by that many killer artists.
Mm-hmm. Wow. What did you share there?
This painting called Moonlight, which was also in that Hammer Mae Mellay show with the music book. It's very subtle. For me, it's almost all white. I didn't really have, when they approached me, I didn't really have that much work because at the same time I was also doing a solo show at Tim Taylor in London.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a painting that I had held for myself since 2011. Mm-hmm.
I
see. It had metallic in it.
Well, I'm looking forward to the new shows coming up. One last thing I wanted to ask you about was tea and chocolate.
So much.
I loved when I read your two vices were tea and chocolate. I thought, there's another reason I feel connected to therapy.
what are your types? What do you like?
I like dark chocolate, and I like chocolate with nuts and caramel, but I do not like chocolate with fruit.
Yeah, I don't do that either. I don't know about dark chocolate. I've been sending photos to my friends that are so hilarious that I've found out how to get a lot of chocolate delivered during COVID. And it looks like I just scored like a huge box of drugs and I have them all spread out. It's really funny.
Well, I think they are a box of drugs. Right?
They are. Yeah. I also really love Artist Tea and it's a Beverly Hills company that makes the best Earl Grey creme tea and white coconut creme. If you like loose leaf tea, move off of that.
But my tea of choice is ginger.
That's good for you.
Yeah.
So I'll switch to that.
I'll give it a try. Well, I've taken up more than 45 minutes. I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
But I'm glad we continued with our chat. Things lightened up and I miss that I haven't seen you in all these years. It's terrible, and I continue to follow your work with great interest and deep appreciation and affection for the work and how it keeps expanding is awesome. Just awesome.
Thank you. Well, I really appreciate your support, and come visit. You haven't seen this place, right?
You know, I keep saying I have to get to L.A., and I had the last time I was to L.A. 10 years ago, or however long it's been since I visited you there, but I haven't been back. You know, I love Valmetter Gallery and know all of them well and really want to get out there. I just need to do it, and I haven't.
Hopefully you see her new space. That's amazing.
I've seen it online, but I just can imagine. And you know, I have a really lovely association with them. I have only respect for what she's done with her program. Yeah, and I'm just delighted when I heard that you were going to be part of the program. So I'm really excited to see. Are you going to have paperwork in her show, or is it all been?
I might show... Right now, it's 7 or 8 paintings. I might show some of these collages I've been making that are they go back 15 years, but they're a little wild card for some people because they have photographs in them. I used to make these in conjunction to the show, and they sort of show, they're kind of journalistic. They show my life and things I'm looking at, but then I paint over it. So,
They're
20 by 30. They're poster size. The first show I ever did with Tony, we made a poster at the announcement. And then I'm doing a show in Maine, and we made one of them as a poster.
I'll kind of look for this. I'll look at those for sure.
Cool.
All right. I will let you go. And I hope you're doing all well. You're doing okay. Stay healthy, Sarah.
Thank you.
And we'll be in touch. And thank you for your time and contributing to this. Okay. Bye.
Bye.